You are listening to Oblivion. It is October 24th, 2022. Well, David, the hot off the presses, new Prime Minister for the British Isles will be sworn in tomorrow. It looks like the colonized have come back to colonize the colonizers. It's the first
Caribbean
prime minister of color. Well, it's Rishi Sunak.
Sounds Indian.
So I guess I've got my colonizing joke, but right there.
Last name wasn't Gandhi.
Yeah. And I don't really know the details, but I'm hoping it'll be just as crazy as the last one. Previous prime minister lasted for 44 days. So.
Pretty bizarre. Do we even really know what happened that caused such an abrupt exit?
Oh, yeah. It was right out in the open. Of course, we didn't know much about it because, there were probably very little you would have seen on mainstream media. But basically, she was an incompetent ideologue, one of these kind of extreme, neocon or, so they was right off the bat, they had this plan to cut taxes for the rich, a big old plan to do that. Probably had austerity in there too, but it was mostly just
they were gonna imitate the American government.
I guess she wasn't very charismatic. That also can help, even with being some people called her stupid. I don't know if she was stupid, but wasn't able to. It was stupid for her to like be pushing this extreme agenda, pro business, pro rich people agenda. Well, I mean, it was the reason that Boris Johnson quit was because of the economic crisis was going on, and he wasn't handling it very well. There actually are consequences. As fucked up as the British system is, at least if they're leading person screws up royally, then they leave, right?
They do something about it.
Yeah. I mean, there's some consequences.
It's almost like that's why voting matters.
Well, but I guess the thing is there's no really like recall for the president, right?
This happened internally because the prime minister, former prime minister, just lost support from the parliament.
Well, yeah, it would be her own party. I guess parliament is the one, right, that can have a vote. And so it usually has to be pretty bad because
and if you're the prime minister, you already have a majority in parliament.
That's right.
For you.
Right.
On your side.
Exactly. But
you have to form a coalition with the rest of the parliament. You have to get a sufficient number of people from the other parties to also be on your side. It's quite interesting that the way you're describing the former prime minister, do we happen to remember her name? I mean, she wasn't in there long enough.
It just popped in my head. Liz Truss.
Liz Truss, T-R-U-S-S, I think.
Yeah.
But you know what was unbelievable? That for a moment there, it looked like who the next prime minister was going to be was Boris Johnson.
Yeah, he was waiting to come
back. And so that
would
have been very much like America, where everything's falling apart, get rid of this person. And look, it's Clinton 2.0, it's Bush 2.0, it's
Boris 2.0.
It's going to do what the person who was in there before the last person. So making things go in cycles. But certainly, and didn't Boris Johnson also resign?
it was a similar situation. It was, you know, they weren't actually, a no confidence vote was not actually made, I don't think, but it was, the writing was on the wall. So the
implied
party, yeah, so the party just says, yeah, you got to step aside here because it's looking, you're making us look bad.
With Dark Age trends,
mm-hmm,
of just completely rotted out institutions.
Yeah, yeah.
It's broken down. It's this.
Totally.
It's like a machine, right? That for a while it works. Once upon a time, it was this new thing that had just been thought of and was put together, and people learned how to make it work. And then over time, people learned how to make it not work, right? Because you can't really think about how to make something not work until you've made it work. Because until you see how it works, you don't know how to make it not work.
Yeah.
And
the situation,
sham democracy,
that I think,
one of your excellent ideas,
right,
definitely accurately describes America. And in Britain, while I think that you could applaud the fact that, I mean, wouldn't it be great if we could have gotten Biden out of office after 44 days? If you look at the, just a little bit on the periphery of Liz Truss leaving after 44 days, most likely what you're going to see, no matter what, is just a repetition of the same thing. And I do think that what we're seeing is that on the world level, we really do have a world government and a world system. It's geopolitics, global politics is the euphemism for it. But what this does is it basically makes obsolete the sovereign nation, that you have a global system that is precisely how you are describing Liz Truss's agenda. It's pro-business, and it's about representing and enforcing the interests of the rich. So while it's definitely both amusing, highly amusing, and I think a good thing politically that Liz Truss is gone, and I think you would agree with me, I'll bet you anything, nothing changes about how Britain works. And nothing will change about Britain, America, the European Union. Nothing will change. I mean, it will in all of these countries. It is not about the people. It is not we the people. It's we the aristocracy.
And you're right. It made me think of the similarities and situations that happened. I think it was Jeremy Corbyn was running against Boris Johnson this last time. Was that the two that were? And Jeremy Corbyn was kind of, well, he was like Bernie on steroids.
Branded the far left.
He was
the Bernie Sanders of Britain.
Yeah, and much, you know, much better, really. I mean, more socialist or social democratic than Bernie.
But he's always, that type of person is always the extremist. Well, he's never the person that wants everybody to have an AR-15.
Yeah, so basically the same thing happened, though, with the Bernie primary thing. You know, it didn't go to where Bernie was against Trump, which would have been great, but the Corbyn against Johnson situation, it was his own party totally, you know, stabbed him in the back, you know, threw him under the bus. You know, there was a faction that it was a successful campaign, but a constant smear campaign by the, quote, moderates of the Labour Party. The third wayers, what was the name of the guy in the 90s who came in with Clinton, the prime minister?
Tony Blair.
Oh, hell yeah. Blast from the past. So, yeah, that's when the Labour Party, you know, totally went pretty much the way the Democratic Party did. You know, this neoliberal, pro-business, fake concern,
pro-war,
fake concern for human rights, and you know, that sort of thing. So,
And also using minority status as a fill-in for liberal ideology, right? Instead of really being liberal, you simply put the women and the blacks in these higher positions, and then that's how you say, well, the government should look like America.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, so now the cabinet needs to have 330 million people? Because that's America. I mean, what do you mean by that? And this emphasis on looks. And I always think about Martin Luther King and how this idea that it matters if you're a woman or a black really is the contrast to what Martin Luther King said, that it's not about the color of your skin.
Right.
It's about the content of your character. And so I think you could describe a neoliberal as someone lacking in character and only is concerned about the appearance.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing personifies, or the better term would be depersonifies, this than the Obamacon.
I hear you, brother. Well, yeah, talk about contrast of MLK and Obama. It's
it's
rather disheartening, really, as far
generational,
as
generational.
Yeah,
right. I mean, you see the extinguishing light from the late 60s in the assassination of Martin Luther King, and then you see the dead end hopelessness of the next generation of the new millennium with the Obamacon, and the way that the two men speak, not just in terms of their words, but more in terms of their disposition, that King was thunderous and emotional and intense, and Obama went out of his way. Every single word he said and continues to say is always at exactly the same volume. And you know a person is a phony when they present themselves and they speak in that manner. No one is like that. I mean, it's one thing to say the president, or for that matter, any good speaker, can't be relentlessly bombastic. Although I would say you're much better served being relentlessly bombastic than you are pulseless.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So as far as, you know, I think you're totally right. I mean, that's not going to change. And I mean, basically this changing the prime minister, they'll have to present a different plan that'll be more acceptable. But
I think we need to start an over under at the Oblivion podcast. Like, how long will this one last?
Yeah.
I'm going to go in and say, is this a man? I mean, these days, the name,
it's a man.
The way they look.
Yeah, it's Rishi Sunak.
Is it a man or is it a they?
Yeah, Rishi Sunak. Other than that, I don't know.
I'll say that he lasts more than 44 days.
Okay. Well, I would guess they're probably going to. We'll kind of see. I mean, there is. If it gets just horribly worse, I mean, what's kind of been behind all this, of course, are hardcore economic woes. In UK, there's even higher inflation there. They're having,
right. I think the closer you are to Russia, the more strain there has to be on your energy sector.
Right, and especially way worse, of course, in Europe. So they're really hurting, and so yeah, who knows? I mean, it could definitely get worse. It doesn't seem like the bankers and the ones controlling things have quite got it, you know, together as far as fixing the situation. They're raising these interest rates, but it's yet to show evidence of what they want done. And unfortunately, part of what happens when they raise these rates is the idea is for them to cause unemployment, right? Because it's to cool down the economy is kind of part of what happens when you do that, or at least it can happen that way.
Right.
And it hasn't been quite, it hasn't stopped. It's still going up, and they're still having to raise the rates more. So it could get out of hand here and in the UK with inflation and you know, there's the stock market hasn't been doing good. You know, we could have a serious crash here, and we're pretty overdue, really. One point you've made many times is that we never really got over, you know, we never got over
2008,
the Obamacons, crash. Well, it happened before him, but, you know, he didn't,
he was a collaborator.
Exactly. That's the perfect word. Instead of bailing out the populace, he bailed out the banks and it's been in the doldrums ever since.
Instead of looking out for the victim, he coddled the perpetrator.
Becoming a perp himself. Yeah.
Right. Like, my job is to look out for the predator and to protect the predator. But that's where the whole austerity idea came from, was we're not going to recover from this. We're not going to worry about trying to get back to where we were in 2007. Right. Just like with the pandemic, this might be a good transition. People became inured to austerity, that you're just going to have to get accustomed to. These rich people screwed you over. You have fallen down. They've gone up, and we're going to keep them there, and we're not going to do anything to support you. We're still not going to have any kind of a safety net. And now you can see it. I know I said the pandemic, but what just came to mind was more the attack on liberal policies, especially in Oregon and California. Last week we were talking about the Oregon governor's race, and then it looks like they're going to have a Republican governor for the first time, I think, maybe in our lives. But I think about the homelessness crisis, and it's, you know, people like, well, I mean, where did this come from? Like, there wasn't any homelessness, and then we had Democrats in California and Oregon, and of course those states legalized pot. And so now you've got to start talking about the extreme far left and all of this homelessness and crime. And it really comes back to the failure to do anything for the people after the 2008 crisis. And that definitely is all the Obamacon. The Obamacon was post-economic collapse, right? And Bush and Cheney were the lead up to the collapse, right? And that's, therein is the collaboration. You know, we'll make it fall apart, then you come in and you protect the people that did all of this incredible damage, right? And then you stick it to the people and you get the people to become inured to, this is how it's going to be, right? If you got your teeth knocked out by someone, we're going to protect the person that knocked your teeth out from prosecution. In fact, we'll give them a bunch of money, and then you just have to learn to live without your teeth. And so we're seeing the long term effects of the 2008 crisis, economic collapse, with the homelessness crisis. And really, beyond that, what we're seeing today is the long-term effects of the Reagan Revolution, right? Pro-business, pro-rich. And it's this version of morality that says the people who have the most money are the best people. that's the way it's supposed to be, because if you have the most money, it means you're the hardest working, and it means you have good morals. You have a good work ethic, right? Your mind is focused on, and it's quite sick and twisted, but playing by the rules, right? Like, you're supposed to work hard. You're supposed to get up early. You're supposed to make money. You're supposed to save the money that you make. You're supposed to spend the money that you make responsibly. And the rich people are the ones who do this, right? It isn't because they steal it. It isn't because they bludgeon and abuse people and kill people. That's not how they get their money. It's not that they fight wars or that they deliberately start a 20-year war in Afghanistan that both parties know we can't win, but both parties lie to the American people for 20 years, and they can make a fortune killing people and telling Americans that, well, we haven't had another 9/11, have we? So it's working. And yeah, it's the long-term effects that we're seeing today of the Reagan Revolution and the and in more recent times the economic collapse of 2008. That certainly explains the situation in Britain, in the United States. And as far as Europe is concerned, that situation is then all the more exacerbated by the Russian war in Ukraine and the cutting off of Russian gas to the European continent, which I think we would want to mention the oncoming. Europe is going to have its worst energy crisis ever this winter. Now think about that. It's the year, it's going to be the year 2023. We're basically getting to the midpoint of the 21st century, right? We're getting at the beginning of the middle part. We're more toward the middle than we were at the start. I mean, at this point, the 20th century is long gone, right? And this was a time in history where we were envisioning that everybody would be the Jetsons. Right. Instead of our lives secure and comfortable, and we're healthy because we understand science and we understand how to control disease, and our lives really should be better than ever. Right. If you believe in this idea of progress, and all these rich people are so incredibly moral and hardworking. Right. They're not a bunch of self-serving predators and devourers. How can it be that, no, it not 1,000 years ago, not after the collapse of the Roman Empire, even during the medieval period, Europe had a better energy supply than it has now? That's unbelievable.
Yeah, bring back.
To make it be that way on purpose.
Bring back whaling.
Where's Captain Ahab when you need him?
And right. So yeah, and the energy prices in the U.S. have gone up too. I mean, this is gonna. I think it's gonna be a factor. People are gonna feel it. In the U.S., just from the energy increase here, because it is a global market, and even though you know, Russia may not be cutting off our gas, these prices are going up. My gallon of gas gonna be too high.
I mean, I have to wonder that the cutting off the rest of the world from your gas, I mean, has to have some. self-inflicted harm for Russia. I mean, if you cut people off from your gas, you're cutting yourself off from their money, right?
Yeah. Well,
if you're fighting a war, wars are expensive.
Yeah, and there's this whole strange situation with the Nord Stream 2 pipeline was sabotaged, likely blown up. And it's still not clear who's involved. Now, we were talking about this a week or two ago. It's a situation where there were signals. Biden kind of coyly was talking about how the Nord Stream 2 would not be opening, and then the questioner, was like, "How are you going to do that since it's a co-owned between Germany and Russia, right?" And wouldn't the Germans be the one that would say they wouldn't, you know? And then it would just be like, there's ways, basically. And Victoria Nuland, the number two, I think, of State Department employee, the famous Ukrainian CIA asset in the Obama years that was part of the 2014 Ukrainian coup, she said basically the same thing. So there was that evidence. But then there's, you know, it's possible that Russia could have bombed the Nord Stream 2. They've had Nord Stream 1 down recently, and that's kind of caused little problems, but it's still open. They can still open the spigot. So that would argue an idea. If they sabotage the Nord Stream 2, then the Europeans would just have to beg for them to open up Nord Stream 1, right? So, who knows what the situation is, but I mean, what it comes down to is this is the fossil fuel world. It's only going to get worse here. This is a limited resource. It's a resource that needs to be, as soon as possible, not used.
We need to transition away from it.
Every pipeline needs to be shut off, and we need to be on something better. And until
it's
that
also
happens,
just based on
these kind of things are going to be just getting worse and worse. These energy crises. It's not going
to
just be from the wars.
Energy crisis leads to economic crisis that leads to domestic turmoil. And we already have an unstable global situation militarily.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's climate change.
Yeah, which is not being addressed. Is near total denial. There is total denial. It's actually worse than denial. There's, again, collaboration, like you were talking about, where the our leaders of the state are basically doing the bidding of these fossil fuel companies. And
right.
And so they're
and
really...
the people love it.
They're...
just like Governor Andy Beshear getting his picture taken with the Kentucky basketball team because they drove to Eastern Kentucky to play their blue white scrimmage game as a way to raise money for relief from the floods.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Of course this is self-serving. I mean, you're talking about the basketball coach by himself makes $9 million a year. And they gave six figures. I don't know the exact amount. Not even $1 million. I don't even think it was $500,000 to this Eastern Kentucky flooding recovery. And in the message, of course, guess what term is not mentioned? They don't talk about climate change. And so it's all about just recycling when the disaster happens, you say prayers, right? You get Lester Holt on NBC to do a feature about how Kentuckians turning to the power of faith in this time of difficulty. And they just show their makeshift outdoor churches in Mayfield and then
The UK basketball games where the
and then it's basketball
the God coach
if religion's the opium of the masses, then basketball is the Vicodin.
Yeah, the Oxycontin
is the Oxycontin. There we go. There's some more hillbilly heroin. That's what we need for Eastern Kentucky.
Yeah,
basketball, the Oxycontin of the masses. But and then it's about, and let's not reflect on what happened and what is actually going on. Let's just go straight to we're gonna build back, and the parrot the stuff that people like Silas House say, like, we keep getting knocked down and we keep getting back up, right? This prideful look at how strong we are. Like, this has nothing to do with what's really going on. It certainly isn't helpful, right? But just like Calipari and Bashir, if you're a high-ranking, high-status academic, you're going to endorse the status quo, and you're not going to go off script, and because you don't want things to change, and you don't want to jeopardize your good standing in the community by saying something that is going to be controversial or even unpopular. And but when that, now, so we're not going to reflect. We're going to go straight to the recovery. Now we're hard workers, right? It's all about us. Like, we believe in Jesus, and we're hard workers. We're not going to complain. We're not going to question things. We're going to dig ourselves out of this. And you want to talk about Europe having an energy crisis. It's hard for me to imagine how life is going to be all that pleasant in Eastern Kentucky starting in, I mean, about a month, because there's got to be a lot of people that are still in pretty bad shape out there.
Hell, they can just get their ass to work, get in them mines, and get out some coal. That'll keep them warm.
If we just get Andy to bring in another car manufacturing plant, then people have work.
Yeah, have coders. Of course, I'm not joking. That's one of the thing projects of Eastern Kentucky coal miners, to become coders for the
punch in codes
programming. So as far as COVID's concerned, it's still kind of been going down. Kentucky's off the top number one list currently. It's Rhode Island, Maine, New York, and it's not particularly high, 23 per 100,000 for them. Kentucky's about number 10, and it's gone down from, it was up 27 or something back when we were number one, and it's now 18 per 100,000, down 39% in 2 weeks. So, hey, that's something. Although I saw on Facebook that Alan got COVID, my brother Alan. Currently don't have any other details, folks, but I'll let you know if he survives.
I mean, that's not good.
Yep, never good to get that. But, you know, he's all vaxxed up. I know he's had one booster, at least I'm pretty sure he has.
Yeah, but if you haven't gotten the second booster, then that means...
Is he going to die now? Don't tell me he's going to die.
Look, here's the problem is that we know that immunity wanes, and we also know that the vaccine wanes. And we also know that if there's one consistent trend in the mutations, it's that they're becoming more immune evasive. Mm-hmm. So at this point, getting to the end of 2022, unless you are up to date on your shots, if we're talking like the very first time you started to get some vaccine in you would have been spring of 2021, that's now pretty much a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And you're basically unvaccinated. I mean, that would be the clearer way to look at it. Like, you're either up to date, you have active and effective vaccine inside your system, right, in the present day.
Yeah.
Or you don't. So if you get it and you're not up to date, then I think you are at risk of getting pretty sick. But the way to find out, like, what is this really like, is not to actually get it.
Oh, come on,
I mean, it's
man.
Kind of like saying,
you're just not.
I wonder what it's like to is it really that bad? You know? Like,
yeah. What's it like to have half my heart functioning? What is it like to have half my heart functioning? Or my brain stem eaten?
That bad only to have one kidney?
Actually, I heard it's not a big deal. I mean, I'm a free market person. I think I should be able to sell that fucking kidney.
That's right.
It's just an extra.
I mean, wouldn't it be great if you could harvest your own your own organs?
Well, I guess it's theoretically possible nowadays.
I mean, instead of this radical far left student loan forgiveness, why don't we just have recent college graduates just harvest their own organs?
Yeah,
you know, and then we can give them to you know, people that need the organs, and then we can train those people to kill all of these immigrants who are taking the jobs.
Well, we've got to have a tie-in with the abortion clinic business, right? So we can use those body parts
along with the fetuses.
The fetuses, yeah, those sell for high because they've got all that stem cell shit.
We can create our own like hybrid, like humanoid.
Oh yeah, you can just keep harvesting their body parts.
And then we can start our own underground stem cell research center.
That's the above ground part, right? They just don't know how we're getting all these stem cells.
Yes, I'm getting ahead of myself. The stem cell research center can be the front for the hybrid humanoid immigrant killing squad.
So let's go. Let's read some campaign literature that I've received in the mail. Let's start with the one that's like the least offensive of of them. And actually, this lady, the Brett, she's a Brett Filiatro. Filiatro, what a name. Barry Brett Filiatro. Or is it Brett Filiatro? Brett Filiatro Barry, or is it Barry? Now I'm totally confused. Anyway, it's County Clerk, Washington.
Filiatro?
Filiatro.
How do you spell that?
Filiatreau. I guess it's French.
True.
Filiatro. But she's the county clerk, running for county clerk. She actually stopped by and left this door thing on. I might have been naked or something and didn't want to, like, shock her with my throbbing abs, et cetera. So I just let her go on her way, and she left this little door hanger thing. And on the back it says, "It's been an honor to serve you as deputy county clerk since 2003. Please give me the chance to be your next Washington County clerk. You have a voice. Vote 19 plus years of experience. Vote 19 plus years of dedication. Vote 19 plus years of friendliness. Vote Barry." And that's a picture of her. So, you know, pretty nice. Guess I'll vote for her. Her boss, she was just voted in, I thought, last time. Maybe it was the time before that. So I don't know what happened to her. Maybe there was a scandal I haven't heard about. Washington County. She was a drug dealer behind the desks. But so, yeah, now let's get into some of the other local gems. This guy came by on a Sunday. No, maybe it was a Monday. Fortunately, I had the gate closed, so he left this down at the gate. You'll find out why it wouldn't have been pleasant to have met him. So it starts with the in quotes, "Being a farmer means you do what has to be done, what it needs to be done. The same is true for the office of county judge. Let me show you how hard work and innovative thinking can make our Washington County greater than it's ever been." Bud Blair. So it's Bud Blair for Washington County Judge Executive. In Kentucky, the Judge Executive, what would you call him? He's like the, basically it's the highest, on the county level, highest official.
You're basically like the mayor of the county.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And so it's a powerful position for the county, at least. There's currently the incumbent as a Democrat, and this is a Republican. So we go down the little thing. It says, "Bud's plan for Washington County. First thing, 100% pro-life and pro-gun."
pro-life and pro-gun.
That's the first
pro-life
thing.
Pro-life and pro-death.
For a Washington County judge executive race, that's the first thing. And the second, support military and secure borders. Okay, yeah, that's really Washington County. This is another key issue.
Right, because, I mean, all those Guatemalans on the edge of the Anderson County line are...
Might come over the border. Yeah. And, okay, so then the next one is lower taxes and gas food prices. Okay.
Pro-rich, pro-business.
Bud's plan for Washington County. Okay. So then the next one is his next plan is to attract quality industries to Washington County. Okay. I doubt you're going to do that, but sure. And then take action against the local drug problem. Why isn't that at the top? Isn't that the thing that's really harming our children? And then face challenges head on is his last one. Okay. That's a plan. he also meet Bud Blair. Here's some other ones he has check marks by. Bring new energy to county government. Bring new energy, not like coal or solar. It's just energy. It's okay to county government. Successful Washington County farmer. Okay, that's the meet Bud Blair part. He's a father and grandfather, David. He's managed employees, maintained budgets, and lobbied for farmers. And he's a
that's two generations of good sperm.
And conservative Republicans on the bottom of that. So, I'm sorry, Bud. It's not looking good. You're not going to be getting my vote. I'm afraid. So then we have another non-incumbent. Running for sheriff, the Republican is Joe Carpenter. My name is Joe Carpenter, and I am running for sheriff of Washington County. Let me let him talk for me. As a lifelong resident of Washington County, I have devoted my entire life and professional career to the support and protection of our great community. Okay. I have ... Number of bullets here. Have served Washington County as commander of the Springfield Washington County Rescue Squad for 25 years and as the county's deputy emergency management director for 25 years. Okay. He's worked as an EMT for 25 years and have been an EMT instructor for 25. Have volunteered as an instructor for CPR and first aid for 20 years. All right, I feel safe. Was appointed to Kentucky Emergency Response Commission in 2015. All right. Advisor and instructor to leadership Washington County's Emergency Services Day. Was elected president of the Kentucky National Wild Turkey Federation. Have worked for the United States.
Wild Turkey Federation?
Yeah. 2018 to 2021. He's been president of that. Have worked for the United States Department of Agriculture for 32
We're
years.
We're getting into some serious prestige here.
Yeah. 32 years as a soil conservation technician, providing insight and opportunity with federal programs to the benefit of our community's farmers. Okay. He's grown up on, having grown up on a beef cattle and tobacco farm on Long Road Road. Okay. Farmer. I take tremendous pride in our county. Dedicated 30 work. He's just repeating himself. I'm not saying anything new. Blah, blah, blah. And... a lack of law enforcement presence, the rise in illicit drugs and substances, and our young people's diminished awareness of the danger of drugs and alcohol are just a few of the struggles our community currently faces. However, by voting for me, you will have a strong and experienced leader and a man of faith who relies on his Christian principles as your sheriff. With the support of our community and my future
Nothing
focus
like separation
plan.
Of church and state.
Yeah. With the support of our community and my future focus plan, we can overcome anything. I want to take the knowledge and experience I've obtained over the last 30 years
Except
of emergency service.
Except for paganism.
So that's pretty much it. Improve safety, protection, and future of overall Washington County citizens. He's dependable,
well,
honorable.
First of all, Dave, I'm just blown away by the diversity of the...
Yeah,
all of the candidates and the wide range of ideas is what you would expect in an open, free society and a democracy.
So yeah, that's.
Oh wait, it sounds like everybody's just a hardcore conservative bigot. I didn't hear anything in there about getting medical marijuana legalized.
Yeah, well, of course it's the Republicans, so that's I guess forbidden for the Christian Republicans. Speaking of Republicans, I got a letter from Rand Paul. That's the only Senate thing I've gotten. I've got have yet to have gotten a anything about our House candidate in the mail. Currently, I guess there's Guthrie, I think is his name. He's the representative of Congress. And we're kind of the very far, it's a weird shape, gerrymandered district or that's a region that's Owensboro is the far western part, and we're the far eastern part of this strangely shaped district. So anyway, didn't get anything about that, but Rand Paul came through his big war chest. He had enough money to send everybody a letter. You probably got one. Dear David, Kelly and I are so blessed to be Kentuckians. Last December's tornado and the recent floods were a difficult challenge for our great state. But Kelly and I were inspired by the spirit of mutual assistance and charity that we saw in our fellow Kentuckians during the recovery efforts. I had the opportunity to meet with and thank so many selfless people, from the heroic linemen that endured freezing temperatures around the clock to get the power back on, to the church groups that arrived with chainsaws to help clear debris. Kentuckians revealed the strength and compassion. Without question, we are our brother's keeper. In my life, I try never to forget that. And then he donated $100,000 himself to the tornado and flood relief efforts. And
another self-serving
yeah,
act of denial.
Yeah. He raised more money, he said. Let's see if he gets into any issues. I was infected in the first wave of COVID in 2020. Fortunately, I had no noticeable symptoms and recovered quickly. Okay. With my newly acquired immunity, I was able to volunteer at my local hospital. I did hospital rounds with the doctors in the COVID unit. I helped the nurses to rotate patients on the ventilator, and I commiserated with families suffering the loss of loved ones. I also worked to make sure all possible treatment options were explored and that no one was denied care because of political bias, huh?
And then I went and filled up all the soft drink machines in the hospital.
I don't know what the fuck he was talking about that. With every speech, I recommended that individuals, especially those with risk factors, should voluntarily consider vaccination. However, I spoke out against the mandates and forced firings of young, healthy people who are losing their jobs or being kicked out of college over their personal health care decisions. Did that even happen?
Like the right to choose to get an abortion.
Yeah. We have seen nurses, doctors, pilots, and even members of our military thrown out.
Or their choice to use marijuana to alleviate their symptoms.
Hey, be patient. They may come up. So anyway, even members of our military thrown out over a mandated vaccine that has now been shown to neither prevent infection nor the spread of COVID, as evidenced by Biden's and Fauci's recent infections in spite of multiple shots and boosters. Okay, well, that's just hardcore bullshit. With every television appearance, I emphasized what Dr. Fauci ignored, that we had a highly effective treatment, monoclonal antibodies that could save lives, but it had to be used fairly early in the disease. Okay. I thought you were a dentist. Anyway, when Dr. Fauci misinformed the public about the effectiveness of cloth masks, I responded that peer-reviewed studies showed that cloth masks are porous to the virus and don't prevent infection. This is something Fauci had admitted himself in his private emails, but continues to mislead about today. I implored anyone who was at high risk.
So wearing masks doesn't help.
Cloth masks. I implored anyone who was at high risk or was caring for a loved one with COVID-19 to use the only mask that provides any significant protection, the N95 mask. Okay, well, that's true.
But now I think that is true.
Yeah. Now we are seeing developmental delays in children nationwide due to forced masking, which had no basis in science. So it's being, all right, so I see what he's saying here. He's saying that high risk or caring for a loved one with COVID is the only time you should have to use one. Otherwise, if you put it on children, developmental delays in children nationwide due to forced masking, which had no basis in science.
That's not true, because if masks stop the spread, children have always been able to spread the virus, and that's omitted when people criticize school closures.
Yeah.
Right. But the children don't get sick. And it's like, well, first of all, there are more people in the school than just the children. Well,
more than the, he's attributing it to the masking, not the, you know, the closings. He says it's all because of the masks.
I had to wear a mask, so I'm developmentally delayed as a child.
I guess that's what he's saying. When Dr. Fauci claimed that the virus could not have come from a lab in Wuhan, China, I pushed back and explained that no animal reservoir has been discovered with COVID, despite testing over 80,000 animals in the wet markets in Wuhan. The mainstream media, after initially censoring anyone who pointed to the lab leak possibility as a conspiracy theorist, now admits that it is indeed likely that COVID originated in a lab. Well, okay, sure. I think that's possible, but anyway. It takes courage to stand up to the pandemic hysteria, to stand against the media, big tech, big government monolith that demands full compliance to one narrative or risk being censored. But challenging the data is not being a denier. Asking questions is part of the scientific method, and I will never stop challenging, questioning, and speaking up for the people of Kentucky. Okay, well, there's real problems with that sentence, but we'll go on. In the summer of 2020, during my questioning of Dr. Fauci, I revealed to the American people that their tax dollars have been funding dangerous and risky gain-of-function research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Fauci denied this to my face, but the facts are clear. In fact, the Chinese scientists actually referenced the NIH number of their grant for an experiment that increased the infectiousness of coronaviruses. This is the very definition of gain-of-function. Americans deserve to know the truth. In the summer of 2021, I fought for and passed an amendment that forbids any more U.S. dollars going toward funding the Wuhan lab in China. I've called for Dr. Fauci to be investigated for lying to Congress. I referred him to the Department of Justice. Unfortunately, Biden's AG Merrick Garland has politicized the Department of Justice and has ignored my referral. I can promise you this, if I am reelected to represent you in the U.S. Senate and the Republicans reclaim the majority, I will subpoena Dr. Fauci and all his records and get to the bottom of the origins of the virus. Well, no, that's fine. I'm fine with him subpoenaing it up and releasing every secret document.
So does he say anything about medical marijuana?
It's pretty long. Let's keep going. But for now, the Biden administration and AG Garland have so weaponized the Department of Justice against conservatives that it has become a travesty. So let me go down. Instead of responding to my cause of investigation of Fauci, there's one more paragraph that isn't worth it. For the past 2 years, I have battled for truth. Well, let me just read this last paragraph because it's got some extra things. Instead of responding to my calls for investigation of Fauci and the NIH, Garland has written letters to the FBI demanding that parents who complain at school board meetings be investigated as domestic terrorists. I understand why these parents are angry and frustrated. Accelerated math classes are being canceled and called racist, while kids as young as 5 are being indoctrinated with critical race theory and groomed to accept childhood sex changes as normal. For the past 2 years, I have battled for truth amidst a contagion of fear and misinformation. And this is in bold. I continue to fight for your God-given individual liberties that are guaranteed by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. I continue to lead the fight against government funding of abortion. I continue to insist that any new spending be offset by cuts and wasteful spending, even when such opposition is unpopular. I still believe that our nation's $30 trillion debt is the number one threat to our national security. Okay, let's see. Each and every day I stand up in Congress to insist that war be the last resort, not the first. Okay. When President Trump said that great nations don't fight perpetual wars, I stood and proudly cheered. But I don't know. That's his anti-war stance is, I think, phony. When Democrats tried to
impeach... Yeah, if you're anti-war, I'm not sure what you're doing in the Republican Party.
Right. I led the opposition against selling arms to Saudi Arabia. Okay, well, so there are a lot of other people. Hey, I'll give that to you. That were being used to starve the people of Yemen. Hey, man. This is an issue over which I've reached across the aisle and worked with several prominent Democrats. So, hey, I'll give them that. Hey. When the governor tried to agree with him on that, and hey, move on. When the governor tried to close our churches and our church schools, I fought him tooth and nail. I urged our state legislators to strip him of the emergency powers and return Kentucky to constitutional checks and balances. Our Republican majority magnificently rose to the occasion and reined in the governor's illegal usurpation. With unchecked power, the governor would have continued the lockdowns of our businesses, schools, and churches. We are now seeing the terrible repercussions of the unconstitutional lockdown policies. Our children, especially disadvantaged kids, have lost vital years of education and structure, and both teens and adults alike are experiencing an epidemic of suicide, alcoholism, and addiction. We must never allow our civil rights to be unconstitutionally trampled again. I will never stop fighting for our future. As I travel across Kentucky, I soak in the beauty of our western farmland, the rolling hills of our center, and the majestic peaks of our mountains. But most importantly, the grit and determination of our people. I am proud of our state.
Self-serving.
I will continue to defend our freedoms with our right to be left alone from ever-increasing government control. As Thomas Paine wrote, government is a necessary evil, and therefore we should keep government to a minimum. The 10th Amendment says that those powers not granted to the federal government are reserved to the states and the people respectively. I could not agree more. And
so we're going to keep throwing people in jail for marijuana.
The left-wing mobs that have brought violence to so many American cities will not be content until they ruin Kentucky as well. My opponent, a street protester and supporter of BLM, is calling for defunding the police. A street protester. All right. Yeah. We have seen...
Oh, by the way, I've got to... Let me jump in, and I got to say this. I have seen, to this point, numerous Rand Paul ads.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I have not seen a single Charles Booker ad.
Right.
Now, how is that democracy? Like, if I'm going to see the ad for one candidate, I have to see the ad for the other candidate in the same amount. And, of course, all Americans will argue, no, you got, that's a rule. That's big government. If the other one's harder working and has more money, that's to his advantage.
He's got to be free to spend his money. Freedom
how
to spend
is
his money.
Right? He's free to spend his money. So how, but how is it a democracy if there's a political race and I only see an ad for one of the candidates? Doesn't that make it totally unfair?
Yeah. So the last line is, please help me keep Kentucky safe from the radicals who would eliminate law enforcement and turn us into a third world nation. Then he begs for money. And nope, don't say anything about cannabis.
Right. That says it all. I mean, and I maintain the polls can say 99% of Kentuckians want it, and I don't believe it. I mean, I just don't think Kentuckians care. They want to be drunk all the time and go to church and be popular in their local community, wearing their preppy clothes and conforming.
Well, I did see Booker had like a legalize it T-shirt. Did you see that? Those pictures. I mean, I'm sure
I mean, I haven't seen anything from Booker.
Yeah, I mean, he was totally shut down, right? I mean. Why wasn't he given the 50 million, you know, 60 million, however, 100 million, whatever the hell they gave Amy McGrath? You know, they didn't give him anything, right?
Now, that's an excellent point, because I specifically remember seeing plenty of Amy McGrath ads. Of course, Amy McGrath wasn't wearing a Legalize It t-shirt. Right. She was flying her fighter jet, going to church, and holding hands with her young children, taking the family photo ops. Military, church, God, military, church, God, family, married, family, God, church. And that's the liberal. That's not the Republican conservative. That's how Chuck Schumer and the Washington Democrats look at the alternative to Republican candidates in a place like Kentucky.
Yeah. So, yep, that's, well, the only last and only thing that I got was a amendment to, well, let's see, what's it say? This one side, it looks like a young girl looking depressed. I just see her hair. It's a stylized, artistic picture, and it says, when politicians interfere in our personal decisions, the result is disastrous. Then the next page is Amendment 2 in Kentucky is government overreach, which will ban all abortion, even in cases of rape, incest, and when the mother's life is at risk. It's vote no number on 2 on November 8th. It's critical that we protect our constitutional rights. If the amendment passes, it will pave the way for Kentucky to permanently ban abortion in all cases. All abortions will be illegal no matter what. Politicians will impose their personal beliefs on all Kentuckians. Beat the ban. Protect Kentucky women. Vote no on the...
It's your personal choice to make your own medical decisions for yourself.
Protect Kentucky.
I'm against big government.
ProtectKentucky.com. So it's a pro-abortion leaflet. That was good to get. Came from Louisville. From paid for by Protect Kentucky Access. So that's all I got for this week, man. One last thing is, has your polling places changed? It's like they consolidated.
Yeah, they changed here, yes.
Yeah, so I don't know what's behind all that to make it harder for you, I would guess, because there's fewer of them.
Yeah, I don't know what else it could be. Why would you?
Yeah, it's doing just fine the way it was.
And ardor. Well, I think that's more than enough for this week.
Indeed. I'm feeling a little queasy.
This is Dr. Dave Overby managing to choke it down. And you've been listening to the Oblivion Podcast.